Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cleese Jacobs.
And welcome to another edition of the Earth Station DCU. All right, tonight we're going to talk DC News. We're going to talk Superwoman number 2 and 3. We're going to talk Action Comics 965. We're going to talk Flash, Arrow, and Supergirl. All right. Well, in DC News this week, Cletus, we found out that Supergirl was not merging with the Arrowverse.
I was surprised. I was a little worried that they were going to do this, but I'm bummed.
I was bummed, too. I was very bummed. I was disappointed it wasn't going to happen. I mean, we can still have the crossovers because we got the Flash. You can go interdimensional. Actually, Supergirl can go the same speed, so she can go interdimensional too, but right. I was hoping to see them on in the same universe.
Yeah,
it'd be
me too.
A lot easier to do crossovers and stuff, but for whatever reason, they decide to keep them separate.
I do acknowledge the point that you have to then reconcile the timelines of Arrow and Flash, but I mean, we already technically are living in a different timeline than the first two seasons of Arrow anyway. So,
yeah,
I don't know. It wouldn't have been like we already have accomplished that in a sense. So I don't think it would have been that big of a jump to then say, well, actually Superman existed in this timeline now.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been that big of a jump at all. I mean, we're already seeing things changing in Flashpoint or from Flashpoint, but we'll talk about that later. All right, and other DC news. I heard that James Olsen was going to be the Guardian, which I'm not that excited about, really.
I was mostly just surprised by this because it really begs the question, why the heck wasn't Diggle the Guardian? if Guardian was on the table, which he clearly is, Diggle basically is Guardian. Like, he has everything except the shield. And I don't know. It's fine. Like, the Spartan identity works. I have no problem with it, but it's like, well, if you had that option, why didn't we use that option? It's not like Jimmy Olsen is Guardian in the comics either.
I'm sure it has to do with the Cadmus Project storyline they're going to be doing this season.
I think they also needed to figure out something to do with the Jimmy Olsen character, because it's the same thing with Iris on the Flash. They keep needing to find creative ways to make her involved in the plot, since she obviously doesn't have any powers and she's not scientifically useful to the team. They find other ways, and she is, and the show is very good about finding ways to make her useful. I think Supergirl needed to find some other way to make Jimmy useful, because if you have Supergirl's alternate identity being a reporter like they're doing now, and you also have Clark Kent occasionally camoing and being a reporter, Jimmy being a reporter gets really redundant, and so you have to find something new to do with him. So from that sense, it makes sense.
I suppose so. I just wasn't that excited about Jimmy being the Guardian.
Yeah. I mean, I already sort of made my peace with this not being the standard Jimmy Olsen when they were like, no, it's James. And I was like, okay.
Well, I guess that's true.
It's weird. It's fine. I mean, you know, when you have Gotham running over on Fox doing all the stuff they're doing, I can't really complain that much.
Yeah, this is minor compared to that.
It's just, honestly, though, in a way, Gotham's been good for me, because, like, I'm so unconcerned at this point now when something isn't really true to the comics, because it's just like, whatever. I mean, if Gotham can stay on for 3 seasons doing this, then it's fine.
All right. Well, then we had, I don't even know if I want to mention this, but we had Miley Cyrus slams Supergirl because she doesn't think it should be called Supergirl.
Yeah, I thought this was funny because she clearly hasn't seen the show. Because in the first episode, the pilot, there's that great line that Kat has. It says, "Well, if you have a problem with Supergirl, isn't the problem really with you?" And so I thought, well, that seems pretty fitting to this story.
Yeah, and the other thing I wanted to mention was basically, it's been Supergirl forever. And even though the fact she's a woman, it's called Supergirl. I mean, we had a Supergirl movie back in the 80s. It's been a tradition. So why would the showrunners change it?
Right, and there is the a valid point too that Superwoman is truly a different character. So like it would be not just changing the mythos, so to speak, to change her name to Superwoman. There are actual characters named Superwoman that you would be ignoring in a sense. And then the other thing is, this is my biggest, I think she raises a valid point in theory that woman would be a better label, but it's one of the things you need to actually see the show to make that judgment. Because I think if she saw this show, I feel like she maybe wouldn't be as passionate about that belief, because Supergirl is a very capable, strong female hero. I mean, even in the episode that we're going to talk about, they still managed to keep her at the forefront despite the fact that Superman is in it. And so for me, I think it's a very strong feminist show.
Yes, it is. And as we'll talk about later, the showrunners did a great job of making sure Supergirl didn't get lost with Superman being on the show.
No, I mean, and she's never overshadowed by a guy in all of season one. I thought that was, I mean, sometimes they were a little on the nose with it towards the beginning of the season, but I mean, once the show hit its groove, to me, it's an ideal show for women and girls to watch. I mean, it's exactly what you want from a female hero.
Exactly. All right, and in our final bit of news, we heard that the Supergirl premiere was the most watched program in the CW's Monday night slot since 2008, which I thought was kind of amazing.
Yeah, I at first I was surprised, and then the more I thought about it, despite the fact that Supergirl was quote unquote struggling on CBS, CBS numbers are higher than any of the other networks. So like a struggling show on CBS is still doing really well, even compared to the other major networks like NBC or Fox. And so her numbers were already pretty good. And you have to imagine most of them followed the jump over to CW. Not to mention the fact that then you add on, everyone knew that Superman was going to be in this episode. I don't think you should discount that. So I think those two factors combined. Frankly, I'm surprised that there was a show earlier that had numbers like this. I don't remember CW ever being that popular.
All right, well, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and do our comics talk.
Hello, my name is Jay Patrick, and that is Adam.
Hello.
Join us for the Adam and JP Show.
Hello.
Available on iTunes and Stitcher Radio.
Hello.
Get it now.
Hello.
Oh, we're just kidding. If you love comics, video games, movies, wrestling.
Who doesn't? These are all great things that make us who we are.
That's true. Then you should join us for the Adam and JP Show. You actually can get it on iTunes and Stitcher Radio.
Yeah, that part was true.
And right here on the ESO Network.
And adamandjp.com.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comics talk, we gotta let you know there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you.
For you.
All right, Cletus. Somehow I missed Superwoman number two, and when comics came out this week and I saw a Superwoman number three was coming out, I haven't read Superwoman number two. How'd this happen? Because I was so excited about the next issue coming out and I completely missed it.
Hey, on the bright side, you basically got like a mega issue instead.
Yes, I did, because I read them back to back and they were freaking awesome.
I just want to say that I felt vindicated by my prediction on who the bad guy was.
Yes, I did. When I was reading that, I thought, "Ah, Cletus is right."
I will say, the timeline on this seems to be weird, because she was definitely introduced during the Justice League run that I talked about on the podcast where we reviewed the first episode, issue of this comic. But when we got the recap in issue 3 of Superwoman, it seemed to ignore her role in the Justice League storyline. So I thought that was weird. So it was like she clearly came from that, but then they kind of, I don't know, the timeline of that seemed really wonky to me, and I didn't know if maybe they were just going to excuse it as like a, oh, it's the Rebirth universe recorrecting itself or something.
So Lena Luthor was in the Justice League, you said? Or not in the Justice League, but in the Justice League run, you said?
Yeah, so after Forever Evil, Lex Luthor becomes a part of the Justice League. And then it's not like immediately after, but a couple issues after, the next big storyline is the Amazo virus, which is a really cool story. And in that, Lex is betrayed by Lena, who you just learned that she's alive. But during Forever Evil, Lex tells this story about his sister and how he wasn't able to save her. And then all of a sudden you learn, oh, no, actually she's alive. And he just hasn't yet managed to save her. And she betrays him. She shoots him. And she's revealed to be on the dark side. She's on Darkseid's side during the Darkseid Wars. So she's a factor. I mean, she's the one that betrays Lex. She even says for Darkseid, like all good Darkseid followers do. And then, yeah, I don't know. I'm very confused on the timeline there.
From what I could tell from reading this issue, is it sounded like Lex had her, something had happened to her, and she was like paralyzed or something, or she was unconscious. I wasn't sure. I was unclear about that.
Yeah, she was paralyzed, and the story in Forever Evil was she was paralyzed and she was extremely sick. And according to that, Lex wasn't able to save her, and then she died. And then, like I said, a couple issues later, it's revealed that she actually is still alive, and Lex is still continuing to try and save her in secret. So that's not new. That is something that was established during the Justice League run. What is new for this is this story we're getting where she sort of remained in Lex's care the whole time, and just recently with this Superman DNA and whatever he's come up with, that's what brought her out of the coma and all of that stuff. So I don't know if they're just ignoring the whole Darkseid thing, or if they're saying that she was mind controlled, so it wasn't really Lena doing those things. I don't know. If my explanation sounds confusing, it's because I myself am confused a little bit by it.
Well, you're not the only one. I mean, the stories, both the issues were really good. It was interesting that Lena had all these different bizarro women.
I thought it was kind of cool that they were able to shapeshift. That was a new thing.
Shapeshifting. That was awesome. It's curious how many of these bizarro shapeshifters are running around out there.
I'm guessing two, only because when we talked about the first issue, it said the Bizarro twins, but that could be wrong.
Okay, I thought it showed more than two, but that you could be correct on that.
They had two different costumes. I actually thought it was interesting. One of their costumes starts below their shoulders, and she looks like the Earth 3 Superwoman's costume, who's an evil Lois Lane, but like a Bizarro version of that costume. And then the other twin, her costume looked more like Power Girl, with instead of the chest window, it's like some sort of costume piece there instead. But it was very reminiscent of Power Girl. So I thought that was interesting that both were references to other versions of a Superwoman, so to speak.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting. One thing that really surprised me, of course, this may be back from the New 52, I was totally surprised that Lana and John Henry Irons were dating.
Yeah, I have to admit, I don't know if that's new or if it was established. I'm hoping it was established ahead of time, because it felt really forced otherwise. Because it fell out of nowhere. She's like, and that's why I love him. I was like, wait, where, what?
So you were just as surprised as I was when I read that.
Yeah, so I can only assume that it was established ahead of this, because if it wasn't, that was like the most ham-fisted way to start a romance.
Yeah, because I was very surprised. And I haven't really seen Steel since back during the reign of Superman, after he died kind of thing. I know Steel had been around for a while. He didn't have the S, last time I knew, he didn't have the S shield on anymore either. He had taken that off, but you know, I don't know anything about Steel during the New 52, or if he was a major player or not around at all, or what happened with him.
I don't really know. The last story I read that he was a major character in was 52, as well as his cousin, who's in this issue as well.
Oh yeah, that's right. He was in 52, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I liked their storyline, but it's probably the least memorable of the major storylines during 52. But that's honestly the last time. So, like, I knew when the cousin popped, I was like, oh, I remember you. And so I had a nice little nostalgia for 52, but that's honestly the last story I've personally read where both of them were major factors in.
I remember her, too. And I like the Rebirth version of John Henry Irons.
Yeah, I definitely enjoy both of the characters too, and I, like I said, I'm not sure if they'd been around. I feel like they must have been, but I didn't really read much of the New 52 Superman, mostly because they were not good. Like, they just consistently were not very good.
The other thing I noticed was Lena ends up with Lex's battle suit he is always in when he battles Superman. Now she has a version of it.
Yeah. I like that too. I thought that was cool, especially since they seem pretty dedicated to the whole Lex being Superman thing.
Yeah.
It's cool to see Lena taking up that armor.
Yeah, we haven't, and the other thing is we still haven't seen Lex being bad other than what, you know, what his sister's accusing him of.
Right, we've seen him definitely be misguided, but he still seems to have generally the right intentions.
Right. So, I mean, we've seen other heroes kind of be misguided too, so that's not nothing unusual, but we haven't seen Lex be evil or bad.
The other thing that surprised me was what it seemed she also had taken over Lex's mother box, and that I was surprised they didn't spend more time on, because mother boxes have always been portrayed as extremely powerful pieces of technology in the DC universe, but particularly in the New 52, right towards the end of the Justice League run, these things were like, this is how Lex got his suit and how he was able to do all of this stuff. So I was surprised that she would just sort of take over his mother box and that really not be that big of a deal.
Not only did she take over his mother box, she was able to control his armor. I mean, she made his armor be so he was the one that was paralyzed.
Well, I think that's because of the control of the mother box, because again, that's what created his armor for him. So if she controls that, she controls the armor.
Okay.
This is what I was saying. This is why I was confused that neither of the characters seemed to be really worried about the fact that she had the mother box. It was all this other stuff. I'm like, wait, Lex, that's really what you need. All this other stuff, what do you care? Get the mother box back.
As we've seen in all the issues of Superwoman, Lex has been not very effective.
Yeah. I did like the subtle touch. And this is one of the things, like, if you've read those Justice League storylines, which I recommend people check out. Traditionally, the mother box sound is ping, like that's the sound effect that they always give it. So like when, oh shoot, I can't think of the guy's name. Scott Free is his civilian name, which is hilarious. Uses his mother box that always makes that ping sound effect. Lex, when he gets his, changes it so that its sound effect is Lex. And now that, and so instead of ping, it's just like Lex, 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 Lex. Now that Lena has it, it's got her name is the sound effect it's making.
That's funny. Okay, one of the other things we learned in this issue was that Lex's Superman, what is it, a Superman serum or something?
That's what it seemed to be.
Was used to make new Superman, the Chinese Superman.
Yeah, I mean, so your speculation on that was definitely right.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if the same serum was used for Gotham Girl. You know, not the same serum, but maybe a derivative of it was used on Gotham and Gotham Girl.
I feel like it's pretty likely. I would agree. That definitely seems, I was thinking that same thing.
So I was kind of glad they explained that in this.
Yeah, me too. It's one of those things. Superwoman has a lot of really important stuff going on it, even though it feels like it's sort of a minor title in regards to like how DC feels about it.
Well, reading these two issues, I got the impression it was giving us a lot of information.
Yeah,
tying things together in the Superman titles.
I agree, and that's why I'm a little surprised it doesn't. It's not, apart from the first issue, DC hasn't been promoting it that much, but it's got like some of the most pertinent information so far, like you were saying.
Right. What's interesting is how it ties into this week's Action Comics 965 too. All right. Was there anything else you wanted to say about Superwoman?
I'm enjoying the story so far.
That's what I wanted to bring up. Sorry to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
Lana's been dealing with some emotional issues or psychological issues. She's been having her nosebleeds, so I don't know if there's any significance to that to do with her powers or her anxiety or her medicine she's been taking.
I am curious if maybe the medicine is making it worse, but the implication with both Lois before she died and now with Lana is that their powers were killing them, and that the more they used their powers, the quicker it killed them.
Okay, so you think that's what's happening?
Yeah, I mean, that was, if you recall in the first issue, when Lois started exerting herself too much, she started to bleed. And now that we're seeing Lana pushing herself extremely hard, then she's starting to break down physically too. It seems to be at least in part tied to their powers.
All right, let's move on to Action Comics 965. Now, this is really interesting because this issue was about Lois Smith investigating the disappearance of Lois Lane.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of funny, her interactions with the other Daily Planet staff members, and knowing how some of them are going to interact, because like she said, they're the same in every universe. But then there was a couple where she was like, oh, I don't know you.
What she was really worried about was meeting with Perry White. She was afraid. Well, her whole fear about going to the planet was somebody figuring out she wasn't the real Lois Lane. And one of her biggest fears was she thought Perry would figure it out for sure.
And I don't know why she would think that, to be honest. I mean, it's not like Perry White ever figured out Clark Kent was Superman. That's all I'm saying. This is exactly what you're saying, where we're starting to see how much of a tie-in Superwoman really is to the other Superman titles. The whole plot of this comic depends entirely on the events of Superwoman.
Exactly, because Lois Lane from this Earth, you know, died. She's been missing, and everybody's been wondering where she's been at. And then you have Lois Smith come into the office. Well, you know, one of the main reasons why she wanted to go into the office in the first place is she got a letter from the other Lois. So apparently the other Lois, or supposedly the other Lois, sent her this message that she was needing help for some reason. From the sounds of it, she was writing some novel about Superman, but I have a feeling there's some other secret going on is why she contacted the other Lois. The other thing that's interesting is Lois Smith has been having, she said she was having dreams, so I don't know if they were nightmares or not, but she was having dreams about the other Lois too, which seems interesting.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it's just like some sort of connection between the two, because they're basically the same person inhabiting the same world. One thing I wanted to ask, pick your brain on, was when Clark spilled the coffee on the computer, it felt like more than just usual clumsy Clark. It almost felt intentional.
Yeah, that is exactly what I thought too. It was like he intentionally spilled it on that computer. I was like, we know Clark's clumsy, but that seemed intentional. Yeah. Right when she was going in there to, you know, use it, it was like it was intentionally done, which makes me wonder about that Clark. And that Clark was really interested in interrogating her.
Yeah. So I'm very curious to see what I'm feeling like this Clark is. I'm very curious to see what direction they're going to go with it. And I was not sure that they were going to go a villainous direction, but definitely, at least unless we're both misreading the situation, it feels like we maybe are going down a villainous path with him.
Yeah. Or he's got some sort of agenda, or he's some sort of clone, or who knows?
Yeah.
Well, that brings up what I wanted to talk about Lois. We had the two different Loises. One of the things I was going to mention was, because they're similar or they're doppelgangers, They may have some sort of telepathy connection because their brain waves are on the same wavelength.
Yeah.
And that's why she's having the dreams and stuff. But the weird thing is Lois is supposedly dead. I'm wondering if she's not dead and she is either somehow disembodied, or maybe she's a prisoner of Dr. Oz or Mr. Oz or whatever he's called.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. I've had this feeling that it's tied in with Mr. Oz somehow.
Probably is. I definitely share the sentiment. I do not think Lois is dead. Even the way that the issue of Superwoman read did not feel like it was supposed to be a long-term status quo. I think it was a short-term consequence for sure, but it was more of like a gateway into a bigger mystery on how the New 52 Superman died, because she directly references that when she appears to die.
Right, and I have this funny feeling he's not dead either. Now, yeah. I don't know if he's this resurrected Clark or not, but I have a feeling he's out there somewhere still too. And either they're in Mr. Oz's sanctuary or world or whatever, or disembodied or reborn or something. Because who knows, maybe that Clark is the New 52 Superman. He just doesn't have his powers for some reason.
Possible.
The thing is, when Superman checked him out, he wasn't Kryptonian. He was human. I guess that's the big mystery.
Yeah. The one thing I'm surprised with these titles is that it seems like Action Comics is going to be, at least for now, more connected to Superwoman, whereas Superman seems to be more of its own title. And that did not seem like it was going to be the case at first.
No, it didn't. The great thing about the Superman title is I like how it focuses on the family.
I agree. Especially these last couple issues have also been a little bit more their own stories. And I love that. I have to admit, that's personal taste, but I'm a little bit biased towards them. But I love self-contained comics recently. I don't know. I've recently been tending to prefer them more.
Well, if you notice in this issue of Action Comics, Lois referenced the secret tunnels out of the farm or whatever.
Finally, I was curious if any other comic was going to mention them, because we've seen a couple different versions of them, and no other comic has referenced another comic's version of them, so it was nice to see that finally.
Yeah, so that sort of tied them, tied the two together, I thought.
Yeah, and what we saw in Trinity still has the coolest representation of the tunnel we've seen.
Yes, it does. One of the other surprises was when Lois Smith went to Lois Lane's apartment, Superwoman was in there waiting on her.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. If you think your friend is dead and all of a sudden you see someone who's clearly not your friend but looks exactly like her, I would have a similar reaction.
Right. So that's another way that Superwoman ties into this, to the Action Comics titles too. They've been tying in together, but this is really going to tie it in.
Yeah. I will say I'm glad that there's at least one of the Superman family titles that is on its own, and that currently is Superman. I'm hoping that it stays that way, that it doesn't necessarily always stay Superman, but at least one of them is sort of autonomous, because I'm hoping that they don't fall into the trap of you needing to read all of the Superman books.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. So, and you're right, the Superman title has been great with their self-contained stories. Well, we got the one going on now where Clark and Jonathan are on that dinosaur island.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty interesting story.
Yeah, and I think they're going to be one of the upcoming issues for the Superman title is going to be, I think, sort of like the lead-in for the
Super Sons.
Super Sons. Is that what it's going to be called?
I don't know if it's going to be called Super Sons or not, but I saw the preview you were talking about. Oh, Superman number 10. It's going to be called In the Name of the Father. And it shows Bruce and Clark looking at each other, and then Damian and Jonathan looking at each other. So I'm interested in seeing where that goes.
I'm very excited for the Damian-Jonathan duo comic.
Yeah.
I just think it's such a cool idea. And I like it more. Like, you've seen similar ideas to this in the Silver Age comics, where they would have like younger versions of Bruce and Clark. But this is so cool because you're seeing their sons, who are very much their father's son, but not, you know, still not quite the same. Like, I think Jonathan is a little bit more fun-loving than Clark. Damian is even more harsh than Bruce is. So yeah. They're more, some in some ways, a little bit more extreme versions of their dads. So
yeah,
I'm excited.
Well, the Damian gets it from, you know, from his grandfather. So
yeah, I mean, it's not like Bruce is exactly a big teddy bear of love either, though.
No, he's not. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that title myself. Well, let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk some Flash.
Flash?
Flash. Here, put these on. We need to talk.
Where are we?
Motor car diner in Central City.
Yeah, man. What year?
1998. If you're gonna get something to eat, because I'm starved. The corned beef hash here is the best I've ever had.
That's why you pulled me out of Speed Force? Buy me a meal?
Because you're about to reset the timeline again after screwing it all up. Well, yeah, I know about that.
How did you know?
After your not-so-subtle reaction when you first met me, Harry told me all that happened was Zoom and your mom. And your dad, so I decided I'd keep my eye on you for a bit.
He tell you anything else?
He did. I'm your father's doppelganger. Sorry about that.
It's just really weird.
I'm really sad, too. I'm sure. Having a loss like that in your life, I see why you want to erase it. Who wouldn't try to save their parents? I understand that very completely. But the thing is, there are consequences. To time travel.
I have heard all of this before.
Not from me, you haven't. I'm not some doctor with a theory, Barry. I'm a speedster like you who's traveled in time and made these same mistakes you are making right now. Here, let me show you something.
You know what?
You remember me, kid? This coffee cup right here. Think of it as the space-time continuum. Whenever you go back in time, it breaks. Now,
real, I mean,
you can reset the timeline. You can try to fix it. But no matter how hard you try, it's never going to be exactly how it was.
Look, I've learned all this stuff that I didn't know before. Okay, I'm not gonna make the same mistakes.
Yeah, what you just said right there, that is the paradox of time travel and also the paradox of life. I mean, if I only knew then what I know now.
I have these powers. If I can't go back and fix what I broke.
We're not gods, we're men who for whatever reason have been given extraordinary abilities. The question you need to ask yourself is, what kind of hero are you gonna be? Are you just going to take a do-over every time you make a mistake? Or will you live with them and move forward?
The Flash this week was awesome.
Yeah, I really like this episode. I think now that we've moved past from the actual Flashpoint story, we can go back to just sort of appreciating Flash for what it is. Without it having to have that burden of trying to adapt a famous Flash story.
Exactly. And I like how they really got into the repercussions of Barry's actions and how they showed it in this episode.
I agree completely. I mean, this is one of the things that I mentioned last week, was that something the Flashpoint comic didn't do and really couldn't do because Barry's memories were erased immediately, was the fallout from Flashpoint. And that's something that this show is able to do. And I think it's a great creative decision to have Barry be able to remember that and have to shoulder that weight, to that knowledge of what he did and the consequences of his actions.
Barry comes back. First thing he finds out is there's a problem between Iris and her father. That was the end of the season premiere episode. So we start off this episode with Barry. I think they showed him running to Felicity first, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah. So the very first thing, he runs to Felicity, and he's freaking out. He's talking so fast. She's like, whoa, whoa, slow down. See, I think this was a great way to tell the beginning of the story, too. So you got him telling Felicity what had gone on. And, you know, Barry's starting to discover everything that's gone wrong. One of the funniest things, when he starts telling Felicity the story, he told her what happened with Iris and her father. But then he stops some jewelry thief. And this is a funny scene because he takes the motorcycle apart and catches all the bullets the guy shoots at him and drops him on the ground.
Yeah, that was great. That was a great scene.
Yeah, that was a great scene. It gave us some lightheartedness because this episode was really a lot darker.
It had a lot of emotional weight to it, but it still felt overall brighter than a lot of the more darker episodes of season two.
But I don't know. I felt like the episode had a somber feel to it.
It did. I agree. It was just it, but it didn't feel pessimistic, if that makes sense. And there was times, not that it was bad, but there were times that it felt bleak in season two. And this felt like clearly Barry had screwed up and things weren't good. But you felt, I don't know, the mood to me felt like things are still going to work out. Like Barry screwed up, but it'll be okay.
Yeah. Well, he was trying so hard to get things fixed.
Yeah.
He was trying to get Iris and Joe to talk to each other. One of the big things we found out was Cisco's brother had died in a car accident. A drunk driver hit him and killed him. And Cisco was mad at Barry because he had asked him to go in back in time and save his brother, and he didn't.
Yeah, and he that had a was big, brutal.
And I think maybe why I felt this episode was kind of somber was because Cisco was so somber.
I agree. I mean, he really is the mouthpiece for the audience, too. And so when Cisco's down, it reflects the audience. So I think that's a totally apt comparison.
Yeah, because when Barry came back to lab, Barry was all happy, gone back and fixed the timeline. He thought everything was back to normal. He was acting like everything was back to normal. And when he comes back into Starb Labs, cracking jokes and being happy and stuff, everybody was just kind of looking at him like, you're acting weird.
Yeah, what the heck, dude? to be honest, I was a little surprised that Iris and her dad were both there.
Yeah, I was surprised by that, too. I was like, wow, they're in the same room together. But that does make sense because they're both supporting Barry. Even though they weren't standing next to each other or anything, they were across the room. They definitely weren't talking.
It made sense in the sense that both of those characters should be helping Barry. I don't know that it made sense with how bitter their relationship was supposed to be at that moment. I don't know. The pissed Iris from season one would not have shown up at all. So I don't.
That
it
yeah.
worked. It worked. It was just one of those things. I was like, I feel like you guys are here because like from a show convenience point, you need to have everybody here. But from a character standpoint, I didn't believe that both Joe and Iris would be in the same room together. Like, how many times could you be in the same room and still refuse to talk to each other? Like, at a certain point, like they said, it's just silly. I was like, yeah, it is a little dumb.
I don't know. I've seen that kind of thing before in real life. So, you know, people are mad at each other. They can be in the same room, but they ain't talking to each other. And not only that, they can be a little, I don't know if I want to say vicious, but...
Yeah.
You know what I mean.
That's true. No, that's a good point. The one thing I will say, speaking of that, though, that I liked that this episode did is that we didn't linger on that relationship because, yes, it is a big change, so to speak, to this universe, but it was one that we've already seen Iris and Joe have their relationship strained to get mad at each other. And I don't want to watch that again for five episodes and then have them inevitably work it out. Because we all know that they're going to work it out. So I was very relieved when this show was like, no, we're going back to the status quo because you guys don't want to see this again. We don't need to show you this again. They're just going to make up.
Yeah. And now that I think about it, yeah, you're right. Everybody else was somber except for Barry. Barry kept trying to fix things. He was optimistic about fixing things. You know, I don't know what you want to call it, dinner date or dinner group. meal. That was funny how he accomplished it, too, because he's running back and forth between Joe and Iris, setting up the plans. You know, he's wanting to fix everything. He's wanting to get things fixed with Cisco, things fixed with Joe and Iris. You know, he invited the whole Team Flash to dinner, and it was funny how he did it. I mean, great humor of Flash, the Flash show was in there still, even though it had a somber tone to it.
Yeah, exactly. And that was the thing that they managed to sprinkle in a lot of, like, because there was, and again, I just want to clarify, I liked these episodes from season two, but there was episodes that were basically just straight dark in terms of, like, I mean, just the Zoom was doing such terrible things. It would have been weird to sprinkle humor in there, but this had a lot of humor really peppered in there along with all of the other ramifications of what was going on.
Barry put the dinner together and, of course, kind of failed.
Yes.
And what was funny was Barry was trying to get everybody talking, and they were just kind of silent. And then he did get them talking a little bit, but it didn't work out the way he wanted to at that point. Then we see Dr. Alchemy bring Clarence in and give him his powers back somehow. And this is part of the other mystery of Alchemy is he's giving metahumans, from what I could tell from what they were saying in the show, metahumans from the Flashpoint back their powers back.
Yeah, I think this is a very interesting concept to be going with. I'm very intrigued by this.
We do not know who Dr. Alchemy is, though I did a search on the internet because I was curious. I was wondering who Dr. Alchemy's alias was in the comics. And I found out it was a guy named Albert Desmond was Dr. Alchemy. And I guess he was called Dr. Element or Mr. Element before that.
It was sort of like there was two different personas going on.
But anyways, I wanted to check on, you know, I wanted to check his history because I didn't know if it'd give me clues to the show. But what I thought was interesting was one of the things we found out that changed in Flashpoint was when Barry went up to his office, there was somebody else in there.
Yeah, and I'm very curious to see whether or not this guy is going to be bad or just... I feel like he could be another Eddie Thawne where everybody assumed that he was the bad guy because his last name was Thawne, and Eobard Thawne is the Reverse Flash, and then he turned out to be a good guy the whole time.
Yeah, I'm hoping that too, because I don't want to see this guy be Dr. Alchemy. And because if you notice, Dr. Alchemy's comic name is Albert Desmond. His new Barry's, I'm not going to call him his partner because they're not really partners. The guy he works in the same office with, his name is Julian Albert. So his last name and the guy from the comics' first name are the same. So I'm hoping he is not Dr. Alchemy because that just wouldn't be that great.
It feels too obvious that it's him. And I also feel like if you cast Tom Felton, you're trying to play on the pop culture knowledge of him being Draco Malfoy. Like, oh, he plays bad guys. And so luring the audience. And I mean, the Berlanti universe is really good about misleading you, thinking, oh, like, they're almost better at tricking comic book fans, like they did with Hank Henshaw and Martian Manhunter, where they tease you these things that comic book fans will know and go, oh, this is going to be that guy. And then that's not who it is at all. I'm hoping that that's what's going to be with Felton's character.
I am too, because I do not want him to be Dr. Alchemy. I want it to be somebody, I want it to stay a mystery.
Yeah.
And so far, the mystery's good. So, and I like the fact that they gave Barry opposition at the police department.
I agree. I felt that the other reason I really like that, because I feel like it helps keep them pulling them back to the police station, because there was times increasingly in season two, Barry was less and less of a forensic scientist. And that's such a good part of his character that it felt like they were losing a little bit. And it's something that happened with Arrow. They got so far away from Oliver Queen being a CEO guy that he's not. He hasn't been for three seasons now. And I was worried that they were going to go down that path with Barry where he just increasingly is less and less of a police forensic scientist. I like this because it pulls you back and forces you, like, almost in a sense back to the police station. Like, no, this is what Barry's job is.
Exactly. I mean, The original Flash show back in the 90s did a great job of focusing on Barry doing his crime scene investigation, his CSI stuff. So I'd like to see that more in this Flash, too.
I'd also like to see more of the intelligent Barry. It's one of those things, it's an unfortunate consequence when you have the other characters on the show are all sort of like the brains of the operation with Wells, Cisco, and Caitlin. You're almost forced to use them as the sort of like, quote, smart people of the team. But Barry's supposed to be super smart, too, and he's always having stuff explained to him that he should probably know. And I get you need to have it because the audience, we don't know. We need someone to tell us that. But they usually end up directing it towards Barry as if Barry doesn't know. And it's like, well, Barry should know this stuff too.
Well, you got to admit, they did a good job. Barry did the explaining on the Flashpoint timelines in this episode.
I agree completely. That's what I'm liking that we're getting back to that, because it was one of those things, again, he started out clearly as like, you know, a scientific genius, and then just because of the nature of the show, it was less and less focused on that. And I'm liking, like I said, I think this, the introduction of this character is good, because it's pulling the show back to Barry the person and reminding us that Barry the person is also very capable in his own right.
After Barry's encounter with the rival, Iris realized something was going on and pulled him aside, and Barry knows he screwed up, and the only way he knows how to fix it is to go back in time and try to fix it again. So he runs back in time, and lo and behold, what happens? Somebody yanks him out of the Speed Force. And it's the Jay Garrick Flash.
I remember last week mentioning that I thought that there was a chance that Barry, that their version of Flashpoint could actually be multiple Flashpoints where Barry keeps screwing up the timeline even more. And there was a brief second where I was like, I didn't think for sure that was going to happen. I was like, wait, was I right on this? And then Jay Garrick swooped in and proved me wrong.
Well, you were right that Barry was going to do that, but Jay Garrick stopped him.
Yeah.
And this was a great scene between Barry and Jay. What's funny was when they came out of time, Barry was in Central City in 1998. And they go into this diner, and what's on the TV? Dawson's Creek. And what's significant about that, if people don't know, is John Wesley Shipp was on that show. He was Dawson's father. One of my favorite shows, only because I related to Dawson back at that time, because that's when I was doing the Chameleon Chronicles, and Dawson was on Dawson's Creek, he was wanting to be a filmmaker. And I was working on my writing at the time. That's why I connect with that show so much. And, of course, I write teen fiction, so. It was just a good homage for John Wesley Shipp. So,
oh, yeah, that's awesome.
It was great. But going back to Jay and Barry's talk, basically Jay was telling Barry, you know, you make mistakes, you have to move on from them. You can't just keep going back and trying to fix them. So he was basically telling him he had to live with the mistakes and move forward, because everybody makes them. So that, I don't know, it was a great talk between the two.
It was, and the thing I loved about it the most was that they've really found a genius way to introduce Jay as a mentor character without having him, without the history that you have in the comics. It was always going to be, they're going to have to come up with something creative to make Jay a mentor. And they've found the perfect way to do that. And it's working great so far.
So that was the other thing I was going to talk to you about. Are we supposed to assume that Jay is now part of this timeline? Is he not? That was what was unclear to me. He didn't come. Did he come over from Earth 3, or was he already?
I believe he is still from Earth 3. But so how he would be able to keep tabs on, I'm assuming he's maybe like camping out in either, I don't know if he's necessarily camping out in Earth 1, but like camping out in the flat, in the Speed Force, I guess.
Maybe he has a connection to the Speed Force where he could tell Barry was in it.
And that must be, I mean, because like Barry said, you pulled me out of the Speed Force, so maybe that's how he's still on his own Earth, but then he realized Barry was doing this, was like, oh no, because he couldn't be watching the timeline, because his timeline wouldn't be the same. So
yeah, you know, they didn't really explain that that well, but maybe they will in a future episode, because I'm sure we're going to see Jay Garrick again.
Yeah, to my knowledge, it's still, he's still on a different Earth, and that's fine. Like, it works for the show. To be honest, it's, that would be more confusing, putting him on the same Earth than putting Supergirl on it.
We get to another battle between Barry and Clarence, the rival, and it was cool to see Cisco come out and help him out.
Yeah, that was awesome. I'm glad we're finally starting to get, like, the real vibe.
Exactly. And that's not the only real character we get. After we get to the end of the episode, Barry was telling Caitlin, you know, you're the only one that seems to be unaffected by the flashpoint. And then when everybody leaves the room, you see her using her ice powers a little bit with her hand, like the chill coming off her hand.
Yeah.
So
that was awesome.
Yeah. So we know she's got the Killer Frost powers. And that's what's changed for her, because before Flashpoint, she didn't have them.
Now, see, this was the interesting thing that, as far as just like the showrunner's approach, is that they seem to be using Flashpoint to course correct the characters for Cisco and Caitlin. Because, like, we know that he's supposed to be Vibe and she's supposed to be Killer Frost, but because of the way they set up the show, it was never going to make sense for Caitlin to become Killer Frost. And so now they're basically use Flashpoint to circumnavigate that, and it's basically, they're just like, oh no, it's different now, so now it makes sense,
right?
In a weird way, it does make sense. But they didn't use that same reasoning for Supergirl. That was the weird thing. Like, they used it for all these other things. They changed John's kid to a son so that it lines up with what we saw in Legends of Tomorrow last year. But yeah, again, and then they left that the biggest opportunity on the table. It was weird that they used some of the opportunities and not all of them.
Yeah, it is weird. Oh, Dr. Alchemy at the end, when Clarence was in the prison, somebody showed up to kill, it looked like they were trying to kill Clarence, but they didn't really show it. They just showed somebody wrapping their arms around his hands around his neck.
The suggestion certainly seems to be that the rival is dead. I was surprised that they killed him off, not because I thought he was going to be a major villain for the season, but just he seemed like he would be a cool character to, like, you know, bring back every once in a while as a nice sort of speed threat to Barry.
Yeah, that's what I thought they were planning on doing with him after, you know, they made him the rival again on this Earth. So if they killed him off, that's kind of disappointing.
Yeah, I agree. I will say, as disappointed as I am, the top wasted villain to me is still the Turtle. That was such a cool introduction of the character, and when Wells killed him off at the end of the episode, I was just unbelievably disappointed. I was like, are you kidding me? You actually made the Turtle really cool, and that's it? That, to me, is still, as far as, like, being disappointed in only using a villain a little bit or even one time, Turtle takes the cake. But Rival, I think, might rank up there. I'm surprised that we're not going to get more of him.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to say about Arrow? Anything else you want to say about The Flash?
I have a lot of stuff I want to say about Arrow, but yeah, Flash was good. I really enjoyed it. And it's one of those things, I think now that we're past Flashpoint, we can really just enjoy the show for what it is. And it was a good episode, and I feel like it's focusing on something that the comic couldn't do, and that's the ramifications. And so far, it's exploring those ramifications extremely well.
Yes, it is. And I'm sure we're going to see more of them as the season unfolds. I think we got the major ones out of the way, but I think there'll be little things here and there that we'll see through the rest of the season.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about Arrow.
Pretty early to quit, Mr. Ramirez.
I can't quit something I haven't started.
You think you can do this on your own?
I've been doing this on my own for 5 months now.
And if you were getting it done on your own, you wouldn't have come here.
I'm out of here.
No mask.
No chance.
On the line.
Wait, I thought there was going to be, I don't know, like an orientation?
Is that what the brochure promised?
That's hilarious.
It's on the line! This is simple. Get past me and ring that bell.
So we're playing games now? Fine. I'll play.
on the line.
Oh, at least he's not shooting them.
On the line.
This is stupid.
Still think it's a game?
I came here to work with the guy who killed Damien Dark, not ring a freaking bell.
This isn't a game. And if you need further evidence of that, then you walk down to the pier and you look at the statue of Laurel Lance.
Man, I am loving so far this season of Arrow.
Yes, it feels like season one again, doesn't it?
It feels like season one if season one was more confident about its status as a comic book show. That makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, it makes sense to me anyways.
To me, season one, by the end of the season, it's clearly embraced itself as being a comic book show for the most part. But at the early episodes, it was really sort of, you know, hesitant to be more than just like a really gritty, grounded crime show about a guy who happens to use a bow. Even if they were references to comic book characters, they were powerless criminals who happened to be in comics, and then they slowly started working them in with Huntress. But this feels like if season one was written now, and when they in the confidence that they have in the property that they have, this is what season one would be in, to a certain extent.
I think the reason for that was nobody seemed to want to do comic book shows.
They wanted to do comic book shows, but they didn't want them to be like the comic books. They're like, well, people want to watch the superheroes, but they don't want, you know, everything that makes them superheroes, which
right.
is
never and
true.
Smallville was the start of that. They wanted to have a superhero show without having a superhero. I mean, they never put him in the suit on purpose for 10 seasons. They always teased us about it. they even had a small Justice League during the show.
I felt like if Smallville came, like, you know, 5 years later, it could have been a much different. I feel like instead of the pseudo Justice League that they had, they could have actually just had the Justice League instead of Barry Allen just wearing a red jacket.
Yeah, exactly. Arrow actually spun off from that show. I know Smallville wanted to have Bruce Wayne and Batman on there, but they got permission to do it, and they had to use Green Arrow.
Yeah, and that Green Arrow was pretty popular, and I know a lot of people, when Stephen Amell was first picked for the role, were upset that I can't think of the actor's name, but the guy that played him on Smallville didn't get the part.
Right, but I really like this version of Arrow.
Yeah, and I'm really liking seeing the dynamic with him being the mayor, and I like that they're showing that he's not doing a great job of being mayor. But we're still getting more of that, where it's not 100% Oliver being Green Arrow, that we are seeing him trying to be the mayor of Star City.
Something that's lacked over the last couple seasons is him being Oliver. The mayor position is helping him be more Oliver. He's more of a dual character than just being Green Arrow all the time.
I agree.
Which he needs, because it keeps him grounded as being more human.
Well, and I think one of the reasons why they weren't able to show that as much is because Oliver was, in my opinion, sometimes not even the main character of his own show. And so I think because the show is sort of remembered that the show is about Green Arrow and not about seven other characters, the focus is back on him. And so there's more time devoted to showing his story as opposed to Thea and Diggle and this one and this one and this one. And we are still getting those other, you know, B and C stories, but the A story is the clearly the story of the episode, instead of trying to tell three stories equally.
They're doing a good job on the side stories too. I mean, the Diggle story this episode was really interesting, seeing what he was going on with him. I like the role Thea's taken as.
Yeah,
I'm surprised they haven't given her the deputy mayor position, because that's basically what she's doing.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I mean, I like the side stories in this season too, because they feel like the side stories from the first two seasons, where they were clearly the side stories, but they were really well developed in the time that they had. Because those stories worked, they started focusing on them more, and so they tried to tell all of them equally. And so within an hour, you try and have four stories told evenly, and so you'd really only get 15 minutes each of these stories, and that's just not enough. What made season one and two work, in my opinion, is that the A story, Oliver's story, was the focus. That was the meat of the episode. But then those little 5-minute spurts were really tight and focused and gave you a really, like, well-written storyline instead of, you know, only getting half of a story for all of them.
Right. And the other thing that really worked with season one and season two was the flashback tie-ins. The flashbacks are really tying into what Oliver is doing this season.
Without being on the nose, that was the problem. Sometimes, like last season, they would have Oliver would learn this lesson on the island, and then he would do the same thing in the present day. And it was like they'd almost have someone say something verbatim, and then that thing would happen in the present day. It was like, guys, come on. Life doesn't work this way.
But I liked how they showed Oliver's training with the Russian mob and how he was trying to use the same training to teach his recruits and how it wasn't working for him.
Yeah. And that felt more natural. It felt like that. I believe that Oliver would try to train people the way he was trained. And so it made sense that he would bring in his brat for training. It was some of the stuff in these previous flashbacks where it was like they were forcing them to be connected by having people say the same thing in the present and the past. So it was sort of, it felt false. It didn't really feel earned. This makes sense. Like, it actually makes sense that you would see this happening.
And it tied in well. I mean,
yeah,
Oliver's training was pretty harsh, and you could see how it wouldn't work with his new recruits.
Well, you know, I thought the thing that was really interesting was that Felicity was giving him, understandably, giving a lot of grief for the way he was training them. But then when you see what actually happened with his training, he had actually already modified it pretty significantly, you know. And it's funny to think about, like, nobody really appreciates how traumatizing his 5 years were, even now.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, because he still remembers the lesson from that in his head was still working together. And and you can kind of see it in his own messed up way. He's trying to prove that you can do that exercise without shooting the other people that help out. But no one else, because like they were saying, because he doesn't let anybody else in, nobody else is on that same page. And so all they see is just a really harsh training tactic.
Right. All right. Another interesting part of this, we're still seeing Mr. Lance battle with his alcoholism.
Yeah, you know, and I actually really like this storyline because it makes sense that his character, like, honestly, it was surprising that his character hadn't slipped back from all the other stuff that's happened to him. Like, I totally believe he's had his daughters die 3 separate times and only has 2 daughters. So
I know. We know he knows that White Canary's, Sarah. He knows, yeah. Sarah is around traveling through time. Does he know she's traveling through time? Or does, yes, she just... Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
He knows she's traveling through time, so he knows she's still around, but he doesn't see her.
And he has no way of knowing if she's still really... You know, because she could die in the past and he'd never know.
Exactly. But he was closer to Laurel, and with Laurel being gone...
Yeah.
I think, you know, he feels more closer to Oliver because Oliver's really, you know, honoring her memory, and I think that makes him feel closer to Oliver, but, you know, he slipped into his old ways.
Yeah.
And he's really having a problem coming back, and it's interesting, you know, Oliver's not really doing anything to bring him back, but Thea is.
I really like how this season has been sort of using Laurel's death as a really galvanizing everybody. Like, it has a significant impact on everyone in a way that it didn't necessarily feel like it had at the end of season 4, which really begs the question, what the heck, guys? Like,
yeah, exactly. They're really showing it this season. I mean, it's affected Thea. Thea doesn't want to be on the team because of it, you know. You know, she has a problem with Oliver's tactics, basically. She doesn't like him killing.
And then you see in Oliver's case, he doesn't... One of the biggest reasons he doesn't want people joining him, like, he was reluctant in the past, but he's even more reluctant now because he's seen what can happen.
Yeah, he's afraid he's going to get close to somebody and lose them. Felicity really had to convince him, you know, he only wanted to work with the old team because he trusted them. And he didn't think these new... it boils down, he didn't trust the new recruits.
I think, and it's funny, I think one of the things that he didn't trust them to do was not die in a weird way. It's not even necessarily that he definitely didn't trust them with secrets and stuff like that, but also he didn't trust that they wouldn't die. And that's, it's cool seeing that humanity in the character, that level of nuance that frankly hasn't always been there with the show.
We found out that the new archer's name was Prometheus, just like you guessed.
Yeah, I mean, I will have to admit, they did say the main villain was going to be Prometheus, and it was just, it seemed logical that that guy would be the main villain, so yeah, I don't want to take too much credit for that.
I still have no clue who the dude is yet.
No, I don't either.
If it ends up being Felicity's boyfriend, I am going to be mad.
I'm going to be so frustrated if he turns out to be a bad guy, because I'm so sick of that storyline. I could not even begin to describe, like, we've seen it so many times. Frankly, if he turns out to be a bad guy, the only thing that would surprise me is that he wasn't dating Thea. I think she's had that happen three times. That could be wrong.
So, but yeah, I just don't want to see that storyline.
No, so, I do not either.
Well, we did learn this week he was a cop, so we didn't know anything about him when we saw him in the first episode. But we did find out he was a cop, so I hope he's not a bad guy either.
That's all I can say. I really hope he's not a bad guy.
As long as he's not the bad guy, let's...
I'd be okay. I'm kind of hoping he's just an average Joe, and that's just like that Felicity is just dating a normal guy. I would be 100% okay with that storyline. I don't need drama in every single aspect of the show.
Yeah, exactly.
I kind of liked it. That was another thing. It was a really nice throwback to season one, was having her go to someone and lie about why she needs something tested, just like Oliver was doing in season one.
I thought that was hilarious. And her story was so lame, just like Oliver's were.
Yeah, that was a great throwback as well. This show, so far, I mean, just all the stuff, all the changes that they've made, really, it's not just that they're trying to do they're trying to do the same thing as seasons one and two. They really seem to actually have an understanding of what made those work better and are doing those things. Because it's not the same. If you just do the same thing, that doesn't make it better. It's actually understanding what actually made it work.
Right, and I think they've gotten it. So, and we were a little concerned about this season, but we were hoping, and it seems like they're heading in the right direction.
The biggest thing for me, as long as Oliver stays the main character, I think they'll be okay. Like, I mean, they can even get a little bit more crazy with the storylines, although I do think he stays best when it's, you know, street-level threats. They can be metahumans, they can be mystical, but it still needs to stay street level. But as long as Oliver's the main character, the show is already on a better path. So as long as they can keep that, I think the show will be much better.
I agree. All right, well, let's move on to Supergirl.
Yeah, I understand, Mr. White. Yes, Mr. White. Yes, I will have my article on your desk, lickety-split. yes, sir, I know that no one says lickety-split anymore. Although you do still say Great Caesar's Ghost, which is a bit of a throwback. No, yes, sir, I'm very aware that we are not talking about you. Right. Yes, sir. Yes, I will have that to you. Hello?
Hang on, we're hearing of a possible explosion aboard the Venture.
Here's all we know at this time. There are over 200 people aboard the craft. There are no further details, but keep it right here, and we'll continue to bring you the very latest.
We can only hope wherever he is, he's seeing this.
I pray she's watching this.
She is.
We have experienced a hull breach and catastrophic engine failure. Supergirl.
see you.
This looks like a job for the both of us.
Absolutely.
How awesome was this episode?
Oh, man, it was so awesome. It was great to see Superman.
Yeah. It was Superman was... It was great. It was exactly the kind of portrayal of Superman that you want, both as Clark Kent and as Superman.
It felt kind of like the Christopher Reeve version, but not quite.
Yeah, I agree. He definitely had elements of the Christopher Reeve Superman. He was definitely very, you know, bright and optimistic. But he still had some level of pathos there that wasn't necessarily in some of the old Superman movies, where, like, the conflict between him and Martian Manhunter, there wasn't a ton of negative words said there, but you could feel that could get pretty ugly between the two of them.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily a feeling that the Christopher Reeve Superman would give you. And that's not a bad thing. In my opinion, it's good that we're seeing it's not the exact same thing we've seen before. It's something new.
Right. What I liked about that was they're not happy with each other, but they're not, you know, there's tension, but there's clearly respect between them.
Yeah.
It's just a disagreement, and, you know, they don't have anything to say to each other, basically.
No, their fight does not have to be resolved by finding out that their mom's names are Martha.
Exactly. But, you know, Superman made a point, as long as you have kryptonite here, you know, I'm not going to help you. Yeah. And that's what his issue was. He doesn't want to battle him or anything. He just has a problem with him having kryptonite there, and he's just not going to help him.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping we'll see them work together in a future episode, because I'd like to see all three of them taking on something.
The thing I am most curious to see, not necessarily in terms of plot, but just from, like, a show running aspect, is how much Martian Manhunter in action we're going to see because of the move to the CW and the budget access that they have. I'm just very curious to see how much they can afford to have Martian Manhunter actually be Martian Manhunter and not Hank Henshaw.
Exactly. But what was cool was we did get to see him at the very beginning of the episode flying with Supergirl. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, I agree. I am really, really hopeful that he's in the big crossover episode. I'm honestly going to be a little bit bitter if he's not.
Yeah, I'd be disappointed not to see him too. So, well, I guess we'll just see what happens when that comes.
Yeah. So all this being said about Superman and how awesome he was, the thing that was the most impressive to me, and we mentioned it earlier, was that Supergirl was still clearly the main character of the story. That she was, as great as Superman was, he didn't overshadow her.
No. And I'm trying to remember the exact scene. There was a scene where, were they saving a plane? What were they saving?
When they first team up, there's a space shuttle.
The space shuttle, that's what it is. They, you know, Supergirl gets there first, and she is saving it, and Superman, this is what I thought was great. Superman comes flying up. He just doesn't grab the plane and help. He pauses, you know, he comes up next to her and asks her if she wants a hand. He doesn't just assume and do it. He asks her. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I like that for a couple reasons. First, it maintains the what they've established on the show, that she's faster, which I'm cool with. Actually, that's kind of cool that they've distinguished their powers a little bit in that sense. So it makes sense that she got there first, because she should be faster. And then even when he does, like you said, he asks her for help, but even when he does help, it's not like from her and just easily sets it down. It takes both of them. She's still contributing just as much to stopping that from crashing.
Exactly. If I remember right, that's not the first time he asked her if she wanted help. I think there was one other time.
Well, there was that one episode where she's actually going to die, and Superman comes and saves her, and then she gets mad at him.
Oh yeah, back in season 1.
He does apologize because he's Superman, but I remember that was the only time when the show was trying to make a point about her being independent. I was like, yeah, I see your point, but she'd be dead if he didn't help. So like, in this sense, can we agree that it was good that he helped? So that was the one time during that season that I didn't totally agree with what the show was saying.
One of my favorite scenes in this episode was where Superman steps in one front of one of those drones, putting his arms out, you know, blocking this family from getting shot by the drone, and then turns around and heat visions the sucker and destroys it.
And then importantly, he turns around and winks at the family.
Oh yeah, yes, and he winks at the family.
Very that was what Superman. Really sealed the deal. Like it was nice to see him saving people. That was awesome. But then that sort of wink at the end was really just like, oh, that's Superman.
Yeah, that's Superman, exactly. I love that scene. It's one of my favorite ones from the episode.
Yeah, that was awesome. The other thing I really liked, speaking in terms of like of when Supergirl and Superman teamed up, was that, and this was genius, really, in my opinion, the way the show did it. They team up, but the way they manage to keep Supergirl the focus is that she's always the one that is performing the necessary action. So with the shuttle, she's the one that gets there first, and she's stopping it from the front, arguably the more important force. And then when they're saving the building from falling over, Superman is the one holding the building up, while Supergirl is the one actually resolving the problem. And then when Lena Luthor is attacked, she's the one that actually stops Lena from getting attacked while Superman goes around and stops all the other ones. So it was really nice in the way that they had them equally contributing, but they did it in a way where she's the one doing the more important action.
That's what the show needed. With Superman being on there, they needed her to be the focus. Yeah. Otherwise, Superman being on there would be a distraction to the audience, I think. Or you know what I mean? If he starts overtaking what her important role is.
I agree. I mean, I think it would be a disservice to the character because it's supposed to be a Supergirl show. It should remain her show. And they did that. I mean, I am honestly extremely impressed with how they did that because, I mean, it's Superman. I couldn't really blame them if they did, you know, have him become more of the focus because it's Superman. And the fact that they didn't is really impressive.
Yeah, it's really impressive. Another funny scene I thought was when Clark comes with Kara, you know, up to the news office, and they meet Kat, and how her personality changed because of Clark being there.
I love that. That was hilarious.
Yeah, that was hilarious, because you know she was, what do you want to call it, goo goo over Clark.
Yeah.
Which, you know, reminds me of the old days when Lois, you know, on different Superman shows where Lois and Kat would be fighting over Clark.
Yeah.
They try to outdo each other.
Yeah, I liked it both from, like, that reference to her past as being one of the Daily Planet workers, but then also just the running joke that the show had that everyone else was, like, wildly attracted to Clark, whether he was Superman or Clark Kent. Much to the chagrin of Kara, who was like, oh, guys, gross.
The one thing I didn't like where the show was going, why do we have to have Kara be a reporter too, just like Clark? I was hoping she'd do something different.
Yeah, I have to agree there. Like, I mean, it makes sense from a secret identity standpoint that it, you know, Clark has that for a reason. It's the easiest way to figure out what's going on and then also have a reason for being missing that being a secretary really does not allow you to do. But yeah, what an uncreative choice.
I know. I was like, couldn't we figure something different out? Why does she have to be the same thing as Clark? I just didn't want to see it go there, and that's where it went.
I also just thought it was a missed opportunity because you really could have had her be a position that maybe a woman wouldn't necessarily hold. And that's kind of what this show is all about. And I felt like it would have been a good opportunity for the show to have her. Like, obviously we have that with Kat being the CEO of a company, But you could have had Kara do something similar and really kind of drive that message home. It just felt like a missed opportunity.
I like the fact that this show has women in different roles, like Kat's in, or we're going to have a female president. Of course, that could be in the real world too soon, depending on how this election goes. But I like how they have women in leadership roles on the show.
Yeah, and that's why it was really surprising that she, not necessarily the role of reporter itself, it's more, she's not moving up the chain of command at all, so to speak. She's, if anything, moving down. And so that was the only weird thing in that aspect. I was surprised they didn't have her pick something where she would be someone's boss.
I would have liked that better. And that's what I was expecting. I was not expecting a reporter, but, you know, when we went into the episode, I started watching. I'm like, great, she's going to become a reporter just like Clark. I did not want them to be the same. I wanted her to do something different. Because it just makes her a copy of Clark. And that's not what I wanted.
The biggest problem is that she works for a media company. And what I felt like, in a sense, they were painted into a corner, because she still has to work for Catco in some sense. And what position was she going to be able to pick that would have any sort of plot value? And so I can see the problem from a creative standpoint. It's just, it doesn't make it less disappointing that she's this exact same as Clark.
What's exciting is episode next week, I think, still has Superman in it.
Yeah, it looks like he's sticking around for at least one more. I think maybe even one more after that. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either, but I'm really excited that we're going to, you know, get both of them again for another episode.
All I'm saying is that if he's in the crossover and Martian Manhunter's in the crossover, we basically have the Justice League on screen.
That's but I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think we're going to get both Superman and Martian Manhunter.
But why not? All I'm saying is, why not?
That would be cool.
Go big or go home.
But do we really need two super people in the crossover?
Sure. Why not? They're fading aliens. It works.
I don't think we're going to see that happen. I think we'll
You can only arrow so many aliens to death.
Or pummel them with super speed.
Yeah, exactly. I agree that you run the risk of having too many characters. But if you already have the entire Legends of Tomorrow team, I mean, you already have a rather ungainly number of characters. So why not just throw two more awesome characters in? I'm crossing my fingers. I'm selfish in this regard. I just want to see them all together.
I know, that would be really awesome.
Even just like one money shot of all of them, like, you know, posing towards the screen would be perfect.
Hey, and who knows, maybe we'll get a Batarang in there.
I would be more excited to see someone wearing a green ring.
Yeah, a green ring.
If they tease Hal Jordan again, I'm going to have to write somebody an angry letter being like, you guys are, this is just cruel and unusual at this point.
Maybe we'll see a big old hammer knock one of the Dominators out.
That would be awesome.
All right. Well, yeah, this was a great episode of Supergirl. I'm looking forward to seeing more of them.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Well, did you have any shout outs for this week?
Yeah, so this week, for my Read More Comics suggestion, there was an original graphic novel that came out for DC just recently called Wonder Woman, The True Amazon. It's yet another origin story this year for Wonder Woman. I don't know why DC's put so many of them out recently, but that being said, it's really good. It's not the same origin story. It's got a really interesting twist to it. It's worth reading to check it out for that. I think it's great artwork. It's a great story. It's a different story. It's something new. Check it out.
Since you mentioned Wonder Woman, I read this week's issue of Wonder Woman. Sorry, guys, I don't have the number off the top of my head, which issue came out this week. But it was about Cheetah's origin.
Right?
Yeah, it was about her origin. Did you read it?
I did. I liked it. I thought it was really cool.
I liked it, too. I thought it was pretty good. And I found it very interesting. And looking forward to the next Wonder Woman issue. Yeah, I just wanted to mention that since you were talking about Wonder Woman.
Yeah, no, definitely. I agree. Read that one, too.
Yeah, read that one, too, even though we didn't review it today. All right, and I'm going to make my usual shout-out to my story, The Chameleon Chronicles. You can find that at www.chameleonchronicles.com or ccnovel.net. Next week, we're going to talk about Batman Return of the Caped Crusaders. So, if I mentioned that last week we were going to talk about it this week, yeah, it didn't happen. But we should be talking about that next week, and also the Legends Tomorrow premiere. Neither Cletus or I got to see it yet, so we will talk about that next week also.
Yeah, can't wait.
I can't wait either. Well, I've seen people posting on Facebook how awesome it was, so I am going to watch that as soon as possible. All right, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you guys next week.
Time to go.
You sure this is necessary?
The Guardians of the Universe seem to think so.
How long will you be gone? But we will be back, little brother.
I wish I could go with.
I doubt your mother would approve.
I'll miss you.
Perhaps you could water the plants in my apartment while I am gone.
Be careful, all right?
May the gods be with you all.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.